From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of May, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises, Incorporated. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, a new bill introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives would put an end to the $147 million annually transferred to the Brazilian Cotton Institute as reparations for the cotton subsidy the WTO found not in compliance with world agricultural trade agreements. And a new study suggests up to a quarter of the vehicle engines tested over 100,000 miles using E15 blends failed. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. At the end of this half hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. He'll join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And Matt Bennett from TGM will help us discuss what's been happening in the world of cash grain markets. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. July soft red winter wheat up 19 cents today to settle at $6.57¾. The September at $6.69½, up 18 and a quarter. The hard red in Kansas City finished the July at $6.72, up 16 cents. July corn 5 cents higher at $6.25. September at $5.38½, up a penny and a half. And December corn futures at $5.28¼, up 2 cents for the day. March contract $5.39¼, two higher than May at $5.47¼, up 2¼. July at $5.54¾ for next year, up 2½ cents. And December of 2013, that's the harvest month of next year, at $5.38, up 2 cents in the corn pit. From the bean pit now, July futures $14.38, up 16. August at $14.05¼, up a dime. September soybeans $13.47½, up 5¼. November soybeans $13.06½, up 4¼. January futures at $13.04, up 4. And the May up a penny at $12.60¾. Bean meal at $4.28, up $3. Bean oil at $50.72, up 29 cents. August live cattle at $120.05, up $1.10 for the day. October at $124.95, up 77½. The August at feeders at $159.92½, up $1.16. And lean hogs at $88.75, up $1.12½. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. The June contract, $92.46 a barrel, down 35 cents. Ethanol at $2.18¼, a penny and a tenth higher. Natural gas at $2.61¼, that's a tenth of a cent higher. And the heating oil or diesel fuel, $2.84¼, a nickel and a tenth of a cent lower for the day. The gold futures finished at $1,574.50 an ounce, up $38.30, and the dollar at 81.3 is just about unchanged. The CRB index at 289.51, up 0.16 for the day. The weather forecast comes from the National Weather Service this afternoon. For the Urbana-Champaign area, says we'll see sunny skies today with a high of 77 degrees on an east-southeast wind at about 11 miles an hour. The winds will gust to 16, and then tonight, mostly clear skies. A low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny skies and 84. Friday night, mostly clear and 61. A south-southeast wind at 8 to 11. And on Saturday, sunny skies and a high of 86 degrees. The south wind continues at 8 to 13, gusting to 17. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 65 degrees. On Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 86. Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It'll be mostly cloudy, 64 degrees. Monday, the showers and thunderstorms will continue, at least as a chance. Partly sunny and 79. Monday night, that shower and thunderstorm chance continues, mostly cloudy and 59. Again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday of next week, partly sunny, a high of 78 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 59. And on Wednesday, sunny skies and 79 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises is usually in Mandeville, Louisiana. That's his new office space, but he's been traveling a bit this past week and joins us from Lambert International Airport in St. Louis today. Hi, home of the Cardinals. How are you today?
Doing fine, Todd. Doing fine.
Excellent. So tell me about the marketplace as you see it since USDA released its WASDE numbers last week.
Well, I think the last couple of days of price action tells you that the market has kind of woken up after that sting from USDA's supply-demand tables. I think when you look at corn disappearance, I think they're off on their ending stocks number. And now with the big export sales that we're seeing made in soybean complex, I think the ending stocks on soybeans is more like 160, 150 rather than the 210 what USDA has. So old crop supplies are diminishing very quickly in here, and we're not really, we're a long ways yet before new crop harvest.
And does that tell you as a producer that you should just sit tight on your new crop sales at this time for both corn and soybeans?
Well, I think so, but you've just got to kind of watch the weather pattern. I mean, the weather pattern does look like it's kind of shifted back to something more warmer and drier. Not a lot of rain in the forecast. There is some. It's not totally dry. But, yeah, I think the market now is ripe here to kind of put some weather premium back into the new crop months. And then, of course, I think, the key driving force is going to be a supply tightness of old crop corn and soybeans.
As you consider what the export market looks like from your vantage point now for a couple of weeks in Mandeville, Louisiana, expectations there for more corn and soybeans to move fairly quickly out of the United States?
There's going to be a big soybean booking for the month of August, and that's where I think this old crop soybeans is going to get very strong. As far as corn goes, it's not such much of an export market as, mostly a domestic usage market. Export, we're going to have plenty of competition as we look down the road. And, of course, it depends upon what size of crop we do raise here. But, no, the focus on the corn market is still pretty much the ethanol industry and how they're going to get enough cash corn to take them into new crop harvest and what happens on, supplies.
Have you got a new or different thought process on why we've had such strong basis and been paying overs in places like Central Illinois for months now when normally we wouldn't need to or even want to, given where the corn is raised, and generally speaking, we've got plenty of corn around, and it seems awfully odd that in the middle of the year, say January, February, March, to pay overs. Do you have, since you've been...
I really don't think we have as much cash corn around as what the balance sheets would imply, and, I guess I would be real nervous what USDA is going to report on June 30th as of June 1st stocks. Now, we're kind of opposite of what we were here a few years ago, where we had a lot of spec interest, a lot of growing demand expectations into the balance sheets, where futures were way above the cash price, and we had wider bases. So now we don't necessarily, the trade is not really looking at growing demand. It's looking at more stable demand on the corn market. And we're looking at a big crop coming at us and increasing carryover, so you don't have a lot of speculative interest to lift the market higher. So then you're basically a falls back now to let the cash market pull the inventories into the domestic channels.
What are the latest technicals or cycles that you've been studying that you find of interest?
Well, I think, short term here, I think the corn market, the bean market, even the wheat market may have put in some 20, 22, 23 week type cycle lows. And the market, I think, is in position here to try to rally into the June, July timeframe. And, you know, we'll have to take 1 week at a time because, you know, if a weather market would develop, I think it'd be very explosive. But we'll have to kind of read, you know, the weather 1 week at a time. But I think the market got terribly overdone to the downside here on this early planning. And then USDA's balance sheet projections, I think, just basically threw the trade a curveball and is kind of sending the market the wrong signal. And I think now you're going to, as you go into the July expiration, everybody's going to be positioning themselves to own July futures on both corn and soybeans and going to try to stand for delivery. So we're going to see that, I think, play out. Now, I don't know how new crop will play out, but I do think you're going to see new crop follow along on the old crop as the trade accumulates cash inventory to meet some of this demand that's at the tail end of the marketing year.
So despite the weather, even if it's good, it's very volatile for the old crop prices. And should we have weather scares of any sort, then we'll see volatility in new crop. But otherwise, it will tag along, I suppose.
Well, especially on soybeans. Soybeans is, you know, USDA's got the carry, old crop carry out there, I think, at 220. It's closer to 160. It could be 140 before it's over with. And then we've got a small soybean crop coming at us, unless we got a big switch here at the end. I don't know if we did or not. We're going to plant everything. There's no doubt about that. The prices were high enough in the dry spring, but just because we had this early planting does not necessarily mean we're going to have a big crop, because I think the early plantings usually tell you that you're in a warmer, drier weather pattern for the growing season. So I'm not one to kind of talk about 166 bushel yield yet. I know all the computer models and all that kind of stuff suggests that, but we've got a long ways to go on that one.
Hey, thanks so much, and have a safe flight back to Mandeville.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dan Zwicker is with Dan Zwicker is with CGP Enterprises, and he's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Speaking of Dan and Mandeville, we'll be headed down to CGP in August from the 20th to the 24th. We'll stop and see John Bondurant along the way. We'll visit Harrah's in Tunica. We'll stay at the French Quarter. We'll drop in on Beale Street. We'll visit the CGB Enterprises Mound City River and Rail Terminal and, of course, their export facility. It looks like it should be a great trip. Folks are signing up. If you want to come along, you certainly can. You're welcome. You can do that on our website at willag.org. And for those of you in our southern part of the listing area, we will stop in Mount Vernon. So if you want to just pick up the bus ride there, that's certainly a possibility. Again, you can find all the information at willag.org. That's willag.org. That's our Follow the Corn bus tour.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says it supports a proposed rule that would align cattle and beef importation rules for mad cow disease with international standards. NCBA filed its comments on Tuesday as the comment period closed for proposed comprehensive BSE rules published in the Federal Register. The proposed rule would help knock down U.S. cattle industry BSE-related trade barriers by aligning U.S. beef and cattle import rules with those of the World Organization for Animal Health. Current U.S. regulations place more restrictions on importing live ruminants and most ruminant products from areas that have BSE, especially when it comes to meat and other meat products from animals more than 30 months old. A group of five House members has introduced legislation to put an end to the annual U.S. subsidy of $147 million to Brazilian cotton interests. The bill comprises just one sentence. The Secretary of Agriculture may not directly or through the Commodity Credit Corporation make payments to the Brazilian Cotton Institute. In 2008, Brazil successfully argued before the World Trade Organization that U.S. agriculture subsidies to cotton producers violated WTO agreements. Following the ruling, Congress and the administration agreed to pay the Brazilian cotton industry $147.3 million a year, the amount determined as losses Brazil incurs as a result of U.S. cotton subsidies. According to the bill's principal sponsor, Representative Ron Kind, a Democrat from Wisconsin, the Senate Agriculture Committee had an opportunity to put an end to the Brazilian cotton subsidies in the markup of its farm bill, but chose not to do so. A new study by the Coordinating Research Council says that one-fourth of vehicle engines operating on a 15% ethanol blend in a 100,000-mile test failed with mechanical damage. However, ethanol groups are disputing the study's findings. The Environmental Protection Agency has approved E15 blends, which is gasoline with a 15% ethanol concentration, for cars and light-duty trucks models 2001 and newer. The majority of the failures, according to the CRC, can be linked to issues with valve seats. The Renewable Fuels Association called the CRC study flawed. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey's Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. By the way, our guest this weekend for Commodity Week will be Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group out of Chicago. I'm also the host of this summer's August 20 to the 24 bus trip to the Port of New Orleans. We're going to visit CGB Enterprises Export Facility there, talk with Dan Zwicker, and on the way we'll stop by and see John Bondurant in Memphis, too. It's a great trip, about 5 days long. People have signed up, so if you want to get registered, now would be the time. Visit our website at willag.org, willag.org, and look for the details under the picture of Dave and me. Up next, you know the cash basis for corn throughout the Midwest has been abnormally tight since last harvest. Central Illinois bids for the second week of May were 35 cents over the Chicago futures prices. I'll have more on what it means with ag economist Daryl Good. The cash price of corn, most commodities for that matter, is usually below its corresponding futures price on commodities exchanges, at least in places where it's widely grown. That's not been the case for corn grown in central Illinois since last fall. University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good has some thoughts on the reasons behind the strong basis.
Well, we really are, and it's been a mystery that we've talked about time to time all year, is why is the basis so strong? Here in this part of the world that I follow, we're running 35 over July as a cash bid. If you look at the five-year average previous to this year, we're 25 under, so you've got a basis that's 60 cents stronger than what we would consider normal for this time of year. And the basis has continued to strengthen as we've moved through the marketing year. The argument continues to be there's plenty of corn out there. Farmers just don't want to sell it, so we have to bump the basis to get them to sell it. It seems to me there may be more going on than that. It really suggests to me that we are using corn faster than the official numbers show, and that the market is really saying, if you believe the cash market rather than the futures, the cash market is really saying stocks are going to be tighter at the end of the year than what's currently being projected. So time will tell which market is correct, cash or futures, but we really do have a big discrepancy right now.
Well, that discrepancy will resolve itself one way or the other once the corn crop planted this spring begins to be harvested in August. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line to take up the cash grain market with us today is, as usual, Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, farmers, I suppose, are awfully interested in what's been happening in the marketplace and calling and checking to see if cash bids remain above the futures. Is that the case?
Most definitely here in the corn. In fact, we've had some pretty interesting basis levels, depending on where you're at. There's been some processors and guys really hunting down corn, so it's been pretty interesting here lately.
Can you talk to me about the processors and which direction? So earlier in the season, marketing year that is, there was lots of worry because Ohio was very late and we were backing up into Illinois trying to get train loads, I think, to go to the southeast to service those poultry and hog farms there. Did that subside or do we still have that kind of a redistribution problem and correction, I suppose, in the market?
I don't see it as much right now as we saw it then. And, you know, last year was definitely interesting because early in the fall, you know, we were shipping corn east whenever that's not traditionally what we do. But as far as right now, where I see the biggest need or where people are pushing the most, several of the ethanol plants have been pushing pretty hard for corn. And, you know, Decatur's been fairly aggressive as well. So, you know, as far as, you know, not naming anyone in particular, you know, I've heard some 70s and 80s over, depending on where you're at.
So let me ask a different question, and this is based on rail going to the southeast earlier in the year. Did that put corn stocks out of position in our part of the world, and did that change the way basis reacted?
Right, and that's a good question, and there's no question that there's a lot of corn. And I talked with you about this, you know, whenever we were actually doing this, corn is going to areas that it doesn't traditionally go. So in the long run, you're going to have some shortages here and there, and I think that's part of what you're seeing, you know, to see Decatur as aggressive as what they are here at this time of year. Usually we get a little later into the summer before maybe we see this sort of a push, and I think that's exactly why you're seeing it.
Will it be resolved fairly quickly with the new crop harvest?
It's going to be very interesting with the new crop harvest. I think whenever you stop and consider what the potentials are, especially with a normal weather pattern or even a little hotter than normal weather pattern, there will be a lot of corn harvested in that, you know, 10th to 15th of August time frame locally. And, you know, you move south, obviously, and that's going to be quicker yet. So I do think that there's going to be corn online much earlier this year on a much bigger scale than what we've seen in past years.
And on the soy side of the complex, what do you see?
Yeah, soybeans is, you know, is a different ball game. You know, whenever you look at the timeliness of planting, it still has been very timely. But as far as, you know, it being super early, I don't think that it's going to be near as big of a deal as what the corn situation is.
And your bids for the day are?
Well, let's see. On cash corn, we'd be 660 in the first half. Step, we'd be 515. 1424 on the cash beans, 1282 on the fall.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, Todd.
And that is Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Thursday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll take up the agricultural weather forecast. Meteorologist Peter Levitt will be here. In the mean space, you might write this one down. Visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org.
It's National Cherry Cobbler Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1733, England passed the Molasses Act, putting high tariffs on rum and molasses imported to the colonies from any place other than Britain and its possessions. In 1803, John Hawkins and Richard French patented a reaping machine. In 1886, John Deere died, an American inventor and manufacturer. He developed the first steel plow in the 1830s and founded John Deere and Company in 1868. As a blacksmith in a U.S. prairie town, he frequently repaired the wood and cast iron plows of Eastern U.S. design because the local soils were heavy and sticky. By 1838, He had produced steel plows of his own design. Deere realized that a plow with a highly polished surface could clean or scour itself as it moved through the field. In 1848, John Deere moved his operation to Moline, Illinois, to lower his costs by taking advantage of better transportation and water power provided by the Mississippi River. Within a few years, production had reached 1,600 plows a year, and Deere was getting his own special steel rolled to his specifications from mills in Pittsburgh. In 1897, Alvin Stackman was born. An American plant pathologist and educator, he established methods for identifying and combating diseases of wheat and other food crops. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line to look at the weather forecast is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd.
It is the third Thursday, and that means we have some new long-range forecasts from the United States government. What do they show?
Okay, this is the official summer forecast coming out now for June, July, and August. First, they give you a monthly forecast just for June. And for June, the forecast is for above-normal temperatures over almost the entire southern 40 or 50% of the United States. And that's a little cool in the Pacific Northwest. And they have precipitation below normal in the Pacific Northwest. In unmentioned areas, meaning the northern tier of states and the Midwest, no forecast that is equal chances of warm or cold. For the summer months, June, July, and August, it's pretty much the same pattern. We're above normal over the southern half of the country, much above normal in the southwest, where we think some significant drought is likely to develop at least through the summer months if this verifies, and it's got a pretty high probability. As for precipitation, it's dry for the Pacific Northwest, as Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and the western two-thirds of Montana are showing for dry. The rest of the country is showing equal chances, which once again means that they're not looking for either excessive moisture or excessive dryness. So when you put this forecast together with above-normal temperatures, warm weather, the key component then becomes how reliable or how good is the precipitation going to be, because that's going to be necessary under above-normal temperatures. And the good news is that for much of the major growing areas from the Midwest northward through the northern plains and even into the Canadian prairies, moisture should be probably adequate and maybe even in some areas a little better than adequate. And with warm temperatures and adequate precipitation, that's a very, very pleasant prospect looking at the summer months. We have trouble areas, as we said, in the southwest with drought, and we think that's probably going to continue. The rest of the pattern in the southeast, drought persists, but otherwise moisture is pretty good between the Rockies and the Mississippi Valley.
Do you think that there'll be enough of a lack of precipitation? I'm not quite certain that's the words I really want to use. And hot enough temperatures in the Delta and maybe the very far southern tips of Illinois and Missouri, the Boot Heel, maybe some of the corn-producing states, that it would cause a problem with early harvested corn?
Yeah, that could be a problem. Of course, everything, the degree days are way ahead of normal down there, and they've got the crop in the ground. So hopefully they'll go streaming through the critical pollination phases before the real heat strikes. But you're right, they're not calling for above-normal precipitation, and they do have above-normal temperatures and well above normal, perhaps, in parts of the Delta region. So I think that is a possible problem area. I think the Midwest and the area that people have been concerned about on dryness, the upper Midwest in particular, for much of the winter and early spring months, I think they're out of the woods. We're looking for some good moisture up in there and into the Canadian prairies as well.
Pete, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Please do visit our website. You can hear him again at WILLAG.org. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great Thursday afternoon.